Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Bryden Morton, he's a chief executive officer at 21st Century. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me.
So it's not just about somebody being unemployed, is it?
No. Unfortunately, the initial effect that we are all well aware of is if you aren't employed, it hampers your ability to provide for yourself and your dependents. But unfortunately, what we're seeing is those effects are not limited only to the present tense, but also have knock-on effects into the future.
And tell me why that's the case.
Well, the knock-on effects into the future, primarily, the most concerning ones are twofold. The one being that, well, presumably when you're young, you're going to get some advice around financial planning and what to do about planning for your financial future. And the most common piece of advice that you're going to receive is around retirement funding of some nature. And in simple terms, the real mechanics around this is starting early, getting a stock of money that you build up over time so that you can take advantage of compounding interest, so that at the end you're making far more than what you did at the beginning. Unfortunately, if you only start being able to start building up that stock from the age of 35 as opposed to, let's say, the age of 25, you can see that you've lost a decade of actually your formative years of that particular plan. So the compounding effect is actually much larger than one quarter if you assume that you'd be saving for 40 years. It's much larger than that one quarter that the one decade would suggest.
Right.
The second part is around skills development within the economy as a whole. So the way that we often have it in our minds is finish school education, whether that includes tertiary or not. That depends on the individual and their circumstances. But we would like to enter the job market at a young age and presumably at some form of entry level so that we can start gaining the skills that we need to be effective. However, if we are only now starting to enter the job market closer to 35, then the issue we have is we're learning later on in life. It's almost like learning to ride a bicycle on your 21st birthday rather than when you were a child.
Yeah, much harder, sure.
So, yeah, those are the two main sort of future-looking effects that were highlighted in a recent article that I wrote.
Right. Is there any real plan that you can see to deal with the youth unemployment? We all talk about it, and everybody, all the politicians stand up and tell us how it's going to be dealt with. But are we seeing any programs, tangible programs in place to assist?
With regard to the specific detail on that, I'm sure such programs do exist. However, it's the effectiveness thereof that I question. And the reason why I say that is if I am an employer and I have the opportunity to employ a experienced employee or a fresh, straight out of school employee, both are willing to work for the same salary, well, I'm going to go for the experienced employee. And unfortunately, the high unemployment rate across the economy means that there are those experienced employees who aren't able to find what they're looking for, so they're willing to actually go back and work a lower level job than what they may have been looking for. But by taking that job,
they're taking it away from somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that the way to tackle this is to make it more attractive for organizations to employ youth. One such example may be perhaps have some kind of tax break linked to the wage bill for under 30s. Perhaps you can write a portion of that off against the profits which you would pay tax on. Right. And that would just make it more attractive to get those under 30s into the building.
But shouldn't we be looking at major projects that could employ large numbers of young people?
That would be the gold standard, and that would be ideal. The difficulty comes in with we would have to be very deliberate in the way that we outline those particular jobs, and they would have to be ring-fenced specifically for people of a particular age group, because if we're looking at it in terms of, okay, we want to get the most skilled, most productive employee available for the job, the likelihood is that that will not necessarily be a youth.
Right. Although if you look at, you know, I don't know, the some of the initiatives during the Great Depression, just simply to get people employed again, it helped, because it creates it's a snowball effect, isn't it? You get people employed, then they spend money, then they need to buy things and just sew it, and then you need people employed, more people employed at shops. It's old fashioned, but it's the most basic way really to look at this, surely.
Correct. We sit with a situation of a bit of a chicken and egg scenario in terms of, do we grow the economy and the knock-on effect is that that will produce more jobs, or do we produce more jobs and the knock-on effect of that is to grow the economy? So it really is a bit of a chicken and egg situation, and the traditional economic theory says spend, spend, spend. However, given the way that the world works at the moment in terms of how unequal the society we are is, it's not necessarily as effective as what it may be on a piece of paper, because the benefits of that spending are not being evenly distributed.
Right. It doesn't help to go and buy a Louis Vuitton bag. That isn't helping anybody, certainly not in this country. I see that our growth rate in South Africa, I think by the IMF, has been revised from 4% to 5%. Does that signal a positive shift towards employment?
In the short term, probably not, but if we have enough of these positive pieces of information coming through, so if we keep growing at rates ahead of what we would expect, then yes, the growth will come. However, it needs to be a protracted period over which we are seeing this type of growth for employers to say, you know what, actually, I can bring on a new individual into this organization and I can ensure that their employment here is sustainable. Whereas at the moment, a lot of employers are feeling the heat in terms of, well, I might need somebody, but at the same time, next month I may not be able to pay them. So it doesn't help I bring them on and then sit with that problem later on. So it's about restoring confidence within business, and the best way to do that is through performance.
What about our draconian or so-called draconian employment laws? I mean, as you're saying, you know, it's not just a financial question that people have before looking to employ somebody. It's the difficulty in dismissing them if they can't afford it or if they don't need them. That's also a deterrent, surely.
Yes, correct. So South Africa, unfortunately, has one of the most rigid employer and employee relations in the world if you look at the Global Competitiveness Index. And a large part of that, unfortunately, is rooted within our history in terms of the mistrust, in terms of the capital owners and labor not always playing with each other in a manner that is conducive to building trust. And unfortunately, because of that, labor needs to be layered in as many levels as protection as possible. At least they feel that way. Whereas organizations are on the other side of it, saying that, well, with all this protection in place, we need to protect ourselves by being 100% sure that we can employ someone before we actually employ them, or otherwise we're going to run into trouble down the line. So, it's a bit of a tricky one there in terms of, I understand how we got to this point, but I do feel that we need to build up a bit more trust between employers and employees if we are to move forward.